Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Ells, joined in the dugout by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
So it's the new year. The hot stove percolated over the holidays, and there's lots to talk about, certainly.
The Blue Jays! And the Twins!
And the Twins. We've got some Blue Jays and Twins stuff to talk about, and not just about Vlad Guerrero Jr. Hitting home runs to the appreciation of cows.
Yeah, well, and apparently the ire of quite a few of a certain type of, from what I've heard, is that he was particularly lazy because he was on a team he didn't want to be on and didn't want to help them get in the playoffs. So in the Mexican system, you could pick players from teams that didn't make the playoffs to join playoff teams. It's pretty cool. And so he didn't want to be on a particular team. So apparently, allegedly, he slacked off in order to... help that team not make the playoffs so he could get picked by a different team. Allegedly.
Yeah. So this is stuff that we won't go into too much here, but yeah, no, there's been some fun off-season baseball stories, but I mean, there's been some exciting and fascinating news in the world of transactions.
I don't think we can possibly cover all of it.
The saga of Carlos Correa, who, you know, over the break, I had resigned myself to the fact that, yeah, like, of course the Twins got outbid a 10-year, you know, $300+ million deal that he goes to the Giants. And then that falls through pending a review of his physicals, and Papa Big Bags, Steve Cohen, jumps into the fray and says, well, I've got money. I'll pay for him. And wouldn't you know it, they start having the same issues about his physicals. And lying in the weeds, Derek Falvey and co come back and sign a 6-year deal with Carlos Correa that has a player options and some other vestings that could conceivably bring it up to a 10-year deal, meaning Carlos Correa could spend a significant amount of time in a Twins uniform.
I mean, it's incredible. It's an incredible coup here by the Twins. You guys should be pumped. I mean, obviously it sucks for Carlos Correa. We're on the side of labor. Mm-hmm. Always, the two of us. And so, like, obviously him not getting his money sucks a lot of eggs, but like it is in terms of drama and the things that we like to laugh at, like, obviously, like, I'm a drama hound, man. Like, this is
you host a show called The Pity Party.
Yeah. Do you know how many hours I have spent perusing different Facebook deep dives about the Carlos Correa stuff? It's unbelievable. Too many hours of my life have been lost trying to track this whole entire situation, man.
Well, including there's a great timeline.
Potentially Joe Hyung some Park lost
wrote on Wednesday on MLB.com. I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah, some lost money. So in terms of the timeline, the thing that I found interesting was that, you know, Falvey, who's the president of baseball operations for the Twins, you know, when he learned that Correa had agreed to this deal with the Giants, he called the shortstop, and apparently they had an emotional farewell, but that, you know, left on good terms, right? There was no ill will, you know, the way in which they handled it never closed the door on things, right? It wasn't like any animosity that like you're going to get money elsewhere, you're turning your back on the Twins kind of a conversation.
Well, and allegedly the doctors think he's healthier too, right?
And this is, yeah, so it was what, a 2014 injury?
That, yeah, the ankle, allegedly, I think.
When
right?
he was in the minors. And so the team doc for the Twins, who'd obviously had the most recent experience dealing with Correa on a professional level, is an orthopedist.
Right.
By trade. So like that's his speciality and an area of focus. And he thought things were fine. Like he, in fact, in reading the Hyung Park sort of timeline, the Twins were kind of surprised by the notion of the flagged physicals and wondered if something like they had missed. And then they didn't obviously have access to any of those physicals when it came to the Giants or to the Mets, because like they were not involved in any discussions. But then when they got a look at the physicals, finally, when, you know, Boris kind of circled back to them, that they were like, there's nothing new here.
Yeah, there's no problems. We don't see any issues. So you guys probably just got a stellar deal on, what do we think, the second or third best shortstop in all the major leagues?
Certainly, yeah. Top three, I would say.
Pretty good. He's a pretty good ball player. And you guys got him on an incredible deal. Again, sucks for Carlos, because like if there are doctors out there that think that he's healthy enough to continue to play baseball at a high level, it really sucks for him that he's lost in the ballpark of what, $180 million. That really whomps.
Yeah,
like that's really unfortunate. I feel bad for him, you know.
Yeah, so the initial Twins offer was 10 years, 285, and obviously that was well exceeded by the $350 million that San Francisco offered. So, you know, when it ultimately settled down, we're at six, and then I guess like the deal could bring it back up to that 285 at 10 years is what I've read.
Yeah, there's enough vesting in it is what I've read that it could bring it back up to about 285, but he has to stay healthy and incredibly productive for the length. So I think I've seen in different places, a lot of experts predict that he'll probably end up making some place in the ballpark between about 240 to about 260.
Right.
And okay, all so said and done.
270, I guess, with the vesting years is what it would be. So they even kind of came down a little bit from what they'd initially offered. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a balancing act. I mean, it is nice to see that the Twins like were involved in a very, because you know it made sense kind of in the same way that the Kawhi Raptors deal, like the 1 or 2 year kind of short thing with big money for a team that was not known for taking risks. This was the same thing with the Twins and the Correa thing, with the understanding that he probably would, you know, go back out onto the free agent market, but with a, you know, chance to prove themselves a little bit, and that they haven't been this type of team in the past. And it is kind of exciting to see that. And I mean, it's not obviously on the level of a San Diego Padres, but for them to be involved and to get, you know, in fact, so the day that Falvey found out that the Giants were not signing Correa, they were announcing the Joey Gallo signing. He didn't get the message until after the Joey Gallo announcement. So, I mean, the they'd already kind of made a little bit of a splashy move in lieu of Carlos Correa that, you know, you and I texted about and I was happy about.
I mean, we love Joey Gallo. We are huge fans of Joey Gallo on this show. And not only that, but like with the way that like the, it's kind of short porchy in left a little bit in Minneapolis. Like he might hit a couple bombs. It's a cavernous outfield in center field. And I think that's why Buxton thrives so much,
mm-hmm.
like right in center and left center specifically, but there's a lot of hay to be made at the corners for pull hitters.
Yeah, no, it's exciting stuff for Joey Gallo. So, like, I mean, not that, like, I was going to be like, okay, I'm 100% happy that we lost out on Carlos Correa, but we signed Joey Gallo. But it went some ways to mollifying me, you know, when I thought we'd lost Carlos. To
now
be
you got
like,
both.
Okay, the team's still doing something. And then it's like, oh, wow, we kind of ended up on the outside at the end of this with an improved team.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you want to talk about, like, rumors, if we're okay to talk about rumors. There's some speculation that exists out there that the Twins are looking at trading Max Kepler and another player, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, for pitching from the Marlins.
Mm.
Specifically, Pablo Lopez's name was the one that was tossed around.
That is interesting. And I hadn't been on MLB trade rumors today, so I haven't seen
I know I saw it on MLB Reddit.
Gotcha. I'm not on Reddit. That's my probably downfall, and for the best that I'm not on Reddit.
Probably for the best, honestly. But it's my coping device since I left Twitter. It's like, sure, my in-between, my Nicorette, if you will.
This is your Nicorette. You, meanwhile, the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays! Let's go! I'm so happy with the moves. Yeah, are you kidding me? Unbelievable. I was complaining so much. If you would talk to me before, like, the holidays, right? Like, right before the winter meetings, about my outlook about the Blue Jays, it would have been despondent. I would have been worked up that they hadn't been working quicker. And then in, like, the 2.5 weeks, you know, since the holidays, it's Dalton Varsho, Kevin Kiermaier, Zach Thompson, little sweetener in there. And then Brandon freaking Belt. Let's go. The Blue Jays are without a doubt a better team than they were last year, both defensively and offensively, I think. They're more well-rounded as a team, and I think that's what we find out does well in the playoffs. Not that I'm a believer that the playoffs mean anything, but if you are going to do something in it, you want a well-rounded team to do it with.
Yeah, you don't want glaring holes.
No.
You don't want question marks. You want to have, like, even if it's like a B- across the board.
Well, I mean, the bullpen is five deep with guys I trust now, right? You've got Romano, Bass, Swanson, Simber, and Garcia. Five guys I trust, right? I'd like an improvement at the lefty spot at Tim Mesa, but you can't always. I get it. Lefties are in demand. And, you know, they went from having a defensive outfield of Lourdes Gurriel, who is a terrible a defensive outfielder and a terrible base runner, and Teoscar Hernandez, who is a wonderful ball player, a good dude and a great hitter, but a terrible outfielder. And they replaced them with Dalton Varsho, who is a pretty good hitter, but maybe the best defensive outfielder in all of baseball. It's either him or Aaron Judge, right? And he's got a bat that can go okay with it. Kevin Kiermaier, who has been a perennial Gold Glove guy, and Brandon Belt, who is a three-time World Series champion. That's and a pretty decent left-handed bat if he's healthy. I'm pumped, man. The Blue Jays. They're going to be a fun team to watch next year. We are going to mash people.
So I was just trying to pull up to see who the best defensive ones on Spot Track are. Travis Sochik on the Score referred to this as a sneaky good offseason for the Blue Jays.
Unbelievable. Well, I mean, like, they're not, because people are so busy focusing on what the Padres are doing and what the Mets are doing specifically. And of course, the Yankees are still doing Yankee things. It's pretty cool that the Blue Jays are kind of flying under the radar. I think they've improved considerably on what they were last year. I cannot wait. This team's going to be a blast. They're going to be a threat on the bases too. Like, this is the kind of thing I was thinking about. It's definitely foresight, right? There's all these new rules that are coming into play, right? The shift is getting banned. Well, the Blue Jays were one of the shift heaviest teams in baseball last year, and specifically to cover up the poor defending in the outfield. So what do? They go out and acquire two of the better defensive outfielders in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I found one list here that puts Kiermaier at third, actually.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's exactly that, right? The bases are getting bigger. And there's going to be a pitch clock, two things that are going to encourage good base running and a lot of steals. Well, what do the Blue Jays do? They ditch two of the worst base runners in all of baseball and pick up two pretty good base runners in Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho, who was an excellent plus, plus, plus base runner. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but at the deadline last year, they thought ahead and picked up Whit Merrifield, who has led the American League in steals more times than I can count. Like this
yeah,
is,
I mean, in
a good move
era of suppressed steals, he's been one of the few kind of like guys with the absolute green light.
Yeah, and so it's these moves that I like, right? They're thinking ahead. They're thinking about playing baseball differently and exploiting rule changes. Major League Baseball already showed that they were willing to deaden the baseballs because they thought it was going to make a better product, because surveys that they've been getting show that fans appreciate doubles and triples and steals more than they appreciate home runs, or at least that's what surveys they've received say, not necessarily, you know, I think that's decent enough data for me.
So plays in the field, yeah. Active, like a live ball.
They continuously, I don't know if you take part, but every single year I get a survey for Major League Baseball. Usually about a month or two before the winter meetings, that it's like, it takes me like an hour. Like it's an incredibly long in-depth survey. And one of the questions is on there is like, what plays do you find to be the most exciting? And it's got a list of like everything, like we're talking about everything, including like intentional walks and balks and pitching changes. If you know, you're that kind of a deviant, I guess.
So it's like what sick person is like, I love pitching changes. I don't know.
I don't know. Mascot enthusiasts, maybe.
people who are dreaming for the return of the cart.
Yeah. The bullpen cart.
The
absolutely.
Bullpen cart. Exactly.
But anyways, the point of this is that based on those surveys through data, I remember hearing about it on Effectively Wild a couple of times, because they tend to interview the surveyors. It's one of their annual interviews. It's that people really do like fast plays, stolen bases, double plays, doubles, triples. People like balls and like the ball in play and dudes running. And that is what they find to be the most exhilarating and most exciting. And so MLB seems to be making steps to push towards that, which I think is good. It shows that they're listening. These rule changes, I think, show that they're listening to what people want. And so I'm excited. I think the Blue Jays are putting a team together to fit the direction that Major League Baseball is going, which I think is smart. See if it pans out, because, you know, every team looks incredible and amazing and on their way to their best year ever in February, January, you know, and then when it comes time in August, you know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of listening, what people want, the Dodgers announced Thursday that they've unconditionally released right-handed pitcher Trevor Bauer.
We love this.
This is who recently served a 194-game suspension for violating the MLBPA joint domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy. He is, of course, now able to be picked up, and we'll see which team earns our wrath for picking him up.
Nobody picked him up off waivers. He cleared.
But no one did. So he did clear waivers.
He cleared waivers. No team picked him up.
There you go. Well,
we did it, guys.
Kudos.
We did it. We got past the Trevor Bauer trap. We made it.
Congratulations to the front office. I thought we would have some sort of Roberto Osuna type situation, but
I think too many teams saw how badly that backlashed against Houston, and there's no way, right? And not only that, like, Roberto Osuna was a good baseball player and allegedly a good locker room presence, right? Like, obviously a jerk, but like you never heard any issues previous to that. Like, everyone always referred to him as a good locker room guy, which again doesn't mean anything. He's still a scumbag. I want to be incredibly clear about that. Mm-hmm. Whereas Trevor Bauer is a universally hated DH and not a designated hitter. if you catch my drift.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
So I think that, you know, it's like, it's probably very likely that a lot of locker rooms have gotten in touch with their general managers and said, no.
No,
you know, exactly. Absolutely not. Do not bring this guy in. Right. We are seeing this happen more and more in sports. I mean, the Bruins did it a little while ago, right? Being like, we're not having this kid on our team. Don't sign him. We won't welcome him in. I think it's happening more and more. Basketball, it's happening all over the place too.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, one team that one player that a lot of folks do want is Brian Reynolds. I know he's one of your boys.
Loved him. I love Brian Reynolds. I think he's great.
Pirates, though, apparently this is a, I mean, take it with a grain of salt because it's coming from John Heyman, but apparently the Pirates are looking for a Juan Soto type deal.
So irrelevant of what I think, it completely irrelevant of about what I believe about Brian Reynolds and his talent, immense as I believe it to be. The Pittsburgh Pirates offered him a $70 million extension. You cannot offer the player that you want a Juan Soto type package in return for $70 million and expect to get that kind of return back.
It is,
you can't be cheap.
Kind of ludicrous, right? Like, I mean, this is, it's peak Pirates behavior.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Both of these moves, like offering a guy like Reynolds 70
is ridiculous. It's a slap in the face. The guy is a tremendous center fielder. I think he's a good talent, right? Like he's 27, he's in his prime, he's a switch hitter, he plays above average defense, he has an above average bat. Like, these guys just don't come around. He's under control for like another 4 years, isn't he? Like, what the heck? It's at least another
like
3.
Yeah, I mean, he's 27, he's still, you know, peak performance. So yeah, they apparently, so the Yankees, I guess, it sniffed around
no.
So apparently the Pirates wanted at least two of New York's top three prospects.
Yeah, of course they did.
Of Anthony Volpe, Jason Dominguez, and Oswald Peraza. So two out of that list of three was the part of what they were asking for in return. So no traction on that yet, but the Rangers, John Paul Morosi of MLB.com has reported that on the hot stove, Rangers is a serious suitor for Reynolds. Texas conceivably has a high upside pitching prospects that the Pirates desire.
I mean, they have a lot of good.
So they got Jack Leiter,
right? Yeah, and I think they've got a couple other ones too. I'm not going to lie and say I'm super up to date.
So they have three in the top 100.
Brock Porter, I have heard of. And Leiter, of course, I've heard of.
Yeah,
mostly because of who his old man is.
Old man, LA. Yeah, no, exactly. But they've got three in the top 100, and the Yankees don't have any pitching prospects in the top 100.
And a point I wanted to bring up too is, when was the last time a Yankees pitching, or not a Yankees prospect in general, ended up being like legitimately good? Like a Yankees prospect. You know, like Aaron Judge was a somebody else prospect that the Yankees kind of picked up.
Acquired.
Right? Like, think about all the Yankees prospects that they've either acquired or been theirs that have gone on to not do a heck of a lot really anywhere. Like Clint Frazier, Dustin Fowler was another one too. Severino is good, but like the kind of thing with him is that like he's not usually all that healthy. Miguel Andujar, he's on the Pirates doing nothing. Gleyber Torres is a roller coaster. Like I don't remember when the last time any of these guys panned out. So if I was the Buccos, I think I'd be a little bit
wary
little bit
of that. I mean, and maybe that's why they're asking for multiples, because they're like, we got a few kicks at the can here, but
we have to.
I mean, the Rangers certainly had, you know, some arm development, and certainly there's some pedigree in terms of, you know, obviously Leiter. It's interesting. I mean, that's this one that's going to kind of keep developing, because Reynolds has asked for a trade. So, I mean, he's certainly clear that he doesn't want to be there.
They can't keep him around, right? Like, I mean, I guess they could, because he's technically under contract to control, but I have to think that if a player wants out that badly, he's going to start sabotaging, right? Like at what point does a player just sit out and be like, I'm not playing another game until you trade me. Like, I'll go play in Japan if I want. I'm curious. Right? Because if they know that they have to trade, if the teams know that they have to trade, I'm like, do they settle? I mean, I guess they'll probably end up settling for a bad package. But
yeah. Oh, so speaking of bad package, I don't know if you saw, so Joel Reuter, who writes for Bleacher Report, posted a tweet about Well, I guess you're off Twitter, so you wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah, I'm not on Twitter anymore, man.
Doesn't get talked about potentially as one of the worst trades in MLB history. The Ozuna trade with Miami and St. Louis.
So yeah. Miami's
Alcantara
had some bad
and
trades,
Zach
eh?
Gallen.
Yeah, I mean, they got a lot for that. It's just fun. I mean, I guess it kind of evens out, right? Because, like, think about, so the idea was that they were going to trade their entire outfield in the course of 3 summers, right? So they traded Stanton, Ozuna, and Yelich in back-to-back-to-back seasons. Not in that order, though. It was Stanton, Yelich, Ozuna, right?
Ozuna, yeah.
And I was like, I think that the thought process is that they were going to get a ton of prospects and basically see which ones stick. It happened that those were the two that really stuck, because they turned Gallen, who's a great pitcher on his own, into Jazz Chisholm, who is one of the more exciting players in baseball, and Sandy Alcantara, who might be a Cy Young candidate for the next 5 years,
mm-hmm.
6 years.
Yeah. So the point is, like, you know, the Cardinals conceivably were World Series favorites if you take Alcantara and Gallen into that rotation.
Oh,
right?
My God. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Alcantara,
if you just kept those two.
Wainwright, Flaherty? No. Oh, that's nasty.
Right? If you just erase that trade and think about what Alcantara and Gallen turn could be in that rotation, it was kind of staggering, like, oh, wait, let's reconsider that. Speaking of considering things, I sent you a ridiculous piece by Will Leach from earlier this week on MLB.com. predicting the next 10 World Series champs, which, like, is a bonkers exercise.
But
the one that kind of made me laugh, I mean, you might be mildly amused to see the Dodgers over Blue Jays in this coming season, but the one 2 years from now, 2024, Mets over Orioles. I mean,
I don't think people realize how good the Orioles are. I mean, I get it, but
the problem is, like, yes, they have a great farm system, but is that system, like, are we 1 year out?
So, I mean, when was the last time you looked at Adley Rutschman's anything page, stats page?
Oh, it's been a while.
So he played 113 games last year, which is, like, an okay amount. But, I mean, he'll very likely play 140 in a full season, right? So we're tacking on an extra 150 at-bats. He put up 5.3 wins above replacement in 113 games. That's crazy pace. That's Mike Trout pace, dude. Like, that's really good.
I didn't realize he was that good. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Adley Rutschman is really good. Cedric Mullins is a 3 to 5 win player. I think Jorge Mateo is a 3-win player. They're going to get a full season of Gunnar Henderson, who put up like 1.2 wins in 34 games last year. Like, they got dudes who can play, young dudes who can play. They need to sort out their pitching situation, because I'm not sure that they've got a ton of pitching prospects I super believe in. But, like, the O's are scary. I think the O's are scarier than people realize. They are looming on the horizon.
Yeah, like, I knew. So there'd been a poll amongst baseball execs as to who has the best farm systems. And, like, the Orioles won overwhelmingly. It was like 50% of respondents identified them as the best. And the next closest was the Dodgers at 21%. But I was not thinking, like, because this essentially suggests that they're, like, 1 year out, right? Like, we're about to enter the 2023 season.
Yeah.
So if they're predicting, if MLB writers are predicting them for the 2024, that, like, this is a tighter timeline than when the Astros rebuild.
Yeah, but I mean, at least for me, it kind of makes sense, right? So they have an incredibly low payroll, and an immensely low payroll, because they are basically paying nobody to do nothing. They have prospects, and of course, right, these prospects are turning out to be very good, and they are very cheap. So if Adley continues to be as good as it appears he is, and Gunnar Henderson continues to be as good as he is, right? The Baltimore Orioles are not a cheap team. They have not been cheap teams in the past. Like, you think about the Adam Jones extension. You think about the Chris Davis extension. You know, they signed Ubaldo Jimenez to an enormous amount of money. Like, they're not cheap. they're just rebuilding. They're doing the same thing the Jays did a couple of years ago where the Jays got really cheap. It's that no organization wants to pay a lot of money for a bad team.
Right.
If the plan is to be better later. But here are some starting pitchers that are going to be free agents next year. Max Scherzer, Shohei Ohtani, Yu Darvish, Clayton Kershaw, Charlie Morton, Lance Lynn, Miles Mikolas, Julio Urias, Sean Manea. These are not nobodies.
You can fix a roster pretty quickly in terms of starting rotation from the sounds of that. And if you've got a very cheap team otherwise, because all these young players, yeah, that's
yeah. And I mean, Manny Machado is a free agent. Just saying, the return of the prodigal son to the team that's finally ready for him to come back and lead them to the promised land.
That would be quite the story.
Well, I'm not saying it's happening, but I couldn't see it. I could see it happening. It's not impossible.
Yeah. It's not happening, but it's not happening.
That's not happening.
Well, we're running out of time here, but before we go, what's on the pity party?
I'm really proud of this one. So unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, a show that was supposed to come out this week ended up not coming out this week. But I assembled a really, really incredible playlist. The first half is very melancholy and inwardly reflective. And then the entire second half after the break is just like bangers, just real go-getters, you know? So we're talking about stuff like stuff from the Jazz June. We're talking about like Origami Angel, Pup, Retirement Party, Stars Hollow, Pew Pew Pew, Jeff Rosenstock. Like, we're going after it in the second hour, so make sure you tune in.
This is like the coming out of the winter break thing and then seizing
that's
the
right.
new year.
Trying to do it, man. Trying to get it done.
All right, well, that's coming up at 1 o'clock. Like I said, I'll put the links to the show things in the show notes, and thanks for tuning in.
Strike three, you're out.